Good morning, Connecticut. And to our friends across the sound, it's John Boquet, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Thanks for tuning in to the award-winning For the People, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Well, we're going to open this Thanksgiving weekend show by showcasing all of the incredible things you and your family can do and learn at the various Connecticut landmark sites across the state this December. From festively decorated historic homes to holiday-themed programs and crafts, Connecticut Landmarks has loads of exciting and fun things to offer in the coming weeks, so stay tuned. Then we're going to replay a previous segment with the Connecticut Business Leadership Network, a nonprofit business-to-business organization whose members are committed to bringing diversity full circle by including individuals with disabilities in the workplace. We're going to talk about the untapped assets that disabled individuals bring to our state workforce. Then we'll close bringing you an encore visit with Ears Pet Rescue, the only no-cost pet ambulance and emergency pet care responders in the state. If you have or plan to acquire a furry or feathered friend, this is the segment and the cause that you're going to want to learn about. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Boquet, right after this reminder. The Connecticut Economic Resource Center has named top economic development projects, programs, and leaders from throughout the state who will be honored at the annual Celebrate CT event Thursday evening, November 30th at the Bushnell in Hartford. These 21 honorees were selected by economic development officials in each of the 10 regions across the state for their contribution to the economy, such as consistent or growing employment levels, playing a critical role in changing the character of the community, or civic engagement. If you'd like to learn more, to register or sponsor the event, just go to cerc.com/celebrateCT. Well, on occasion, we get to go to them. On other occasions, we catch up with them on the phone. I'm talking about Connecticut Landmarks, and the Connecticut Landmarks historic homes are essentially time capsules of our state's history. And this time of year, they offer a perfect setting to experience an old-fashioned colonial holiday season and Christmas time. The properties are all going to be decked out for the holidays and have a full calendar of activities for the family to enjoy together. If you have guests coming in, it's a perfect way to spend a day at one of the various Connecticut Landmarks properties. And here to tell us all about the special events and all the wonderful stuff that's coming up with this nonprofit organization is Cheryl Hack. She's been with us a number of occasions before. She's executive director of Connecticut Landmark. Cheryl, thanks for joining us once again.
Thank you, John.
So tell us quickly about what Connecticut Landmarks is. It's not just an entity. It's places, too.
It sure is, John. Connecticut Landmarks is the state's largest heritage organization. We own 11 historic properties, all of which are listed on our website at c2landmarks.org, that we make available to the public through programming and opportunities to hike and walk and enjoy beautiful gardens, and, of course, at this time of year to celebrate the holidays.
Excellent. Kind of off script a little bit, but when I first became interested and met you and learned about Connecticut Landmarks, there was only a few properties. Now you're up to 11, and this begs the question. It used to be, even a few years ago, towns would have their historical societies housed in historic homes or properties. Towns would sort of have their various historic entities that might not be municipally owned properties, but were kind of standalone nonprofits or for profits. Is it a kind of a movement now that organizations like Connecticut Landmarks are popping up all over the place, sort of as an umbrella agency to take over the promotion and, to some extent, administration of these cherished properties?
Well, Connecticut Landmarks has actually been around since 1936.
Oh, okay.
When the organization was established and acquired the Hempstead House in New London, the Joshua Hempstead House from 1658. The only property that survived the building burning of New London. So Connecticut Landmarks has grown over its getting close to 100 years history, not quite yet, though. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there are many different individual and umbrella organizations that take on the challenge of stewarding Connecticut's and America's really important special places.
Okay. So the cool thing about any of the Connecticut Landmarks properties is you don't just look at, to some extent, if you can't touch stuff at the properties, there's almost always activities that involve some sort of hands-on interactive fun.
Absolutely. And, you know, from the Fairy Festival at the Bellamy Faraday House and Garden that happens in the spring of each year to the youth camps that are offered during the summer at the Hempstead Houses in New London, at the Hale Homestead in Coventry, and at the Phelps Hathaway House and Garden in Suffield, to school programs throughout the school season, and even to making at the Bellamy Faraday House and Garden over the holidays. There are just many different types of events and programs and activities that give folks the opportunity to enjoy these spectacular places.
So the first time that we met was at one of the properties in Bethlehem, and I understand that has recently inspired a best-selling novel. What's that all about?
Yeah, so we're so fortunate that an amazingly talented writer and woman by the name of Martha Hall Kelly wrote Lilac Girls. And there's a really sweet story that Martha tells about being a little bit down in the dumps after her mother passed and going to the Bellamy Faraday House and Garden on Mother's Day and hearing the story of Caroline Faraday's work to address the needs of Polish women who were incarcerated by the Nazis during World War II in the Ravensbrück concentration camp and upon whom experimental surgeries were performed so that they could not walk. They were called lapin or rabbit by the Nazis because in a derisive way because they were treated both as laboratory animals and because they hopped like rabbits or lapin. So fast forward to the close of the war when Caroline worked to both get them reparations from the Polish government, which was a very difficult task because at that point they were under a communist regime who really didn't want to have to deal with any of this, and to bring 35 of these women to this country to have corrective surgeries done. Mm. And a number of those women celebrated Christmas at Caroline's home, the Hay in Bethlehem, Connecticut, which we are now the proud owners of. So we are delighted to welcome guests to a Polish holiday celebration inspired by Caroline's work, which we're calling A Polish Christmas with Martha Hall Kelly. And that event will be held on Sunday, December 10th. From 1 until 5 in Bethlehem.
So folks can actually meet and greet and get a copy of Lilac Girl signed by the author, but tell us the incredible world of period decor that they'll be immersed in from the moment they drive up the driveway there in Bethlehem.
Yeah, so the house will be festively decorated in a way commensurate with Polish celebrations. And one room that will be really interesting is the dining room, which will lay out what a Polish holiday celebration meal looks like. And then other parts of the house will be festively decorated, maybe a little beyond the Polish tradition, quite frankly, because the house is so beautiful that it bespeaks a level of festive decoration that would not have been characteristic of the World War II period. But we'll feature similar types of materials like fresh greens, And we'll also feature some beautiful floral arrangements by local florists that we have the privilege of working with, and by some really amazing volunteers who have come to us to help put this together.
And folks will also hear from Martha about another book that's in the plan, right?
Yeah, so the way that it will work is that we'll have, so tickets are required, cglandmarks.org or 860-247-8996, extension 23 is how to purchase those tickets, because it will be limited availability at the event. And, you know, we'll start with offering visitors the opportunity to go through the house. Martha will be in the kitchen, where we have some amazing photographs of Caroline with the Lapa. So that's a favorite place for people to visit. She'll be signing books there. And then we'll invite people to go down to Memorial Hall in Bethlehem, which is actually where they'll park when they arrive and check in. It's just across the street, lots mm-hmm. of parking.
Yep.
Then Martha will be speaking there at 3, and we'll have a variety of local craft vendors and a special Lilac Girls Bellamy Faraday House ornament for sale.
Nice.
So there'll be time to do some Christmas shopping, enjoy some refreshments before Martha does a formal talk.
Great. Let's transport ourselves up now to Suffield, to the Phelps Hathaway House, another big celebration coming up a little sooner, December 1st through the 3rd, and partnering on this project with the local garden club. That sounds like it's going to be beautiful.
Oh, it's going to be amazing, John. So this is something that we've done for a number of years now, with a different theme and different floral designers each year. So the theme this year is 'Twas the Week Before Christmas, and the house will be abuzz with activity and beautiful aromas, both floral and food-wise, in anticipation of the holiday season, with all of those preparations underway.
And speaking of a buzz, it all kicks off with a big cocktail party.
It does. So Friday evening, December 1st, from 6 until 9, we'll have a champagne toast. There'll be a preview of the amazingly beautiful decorated rooms. And, of course, food by the Federal Restaurant in Agawam, which is an absolutely amazing culinary destination in that part of the state and region. Mm.
And to give equal time to kids of all ages, especially those who cherish their teddy bears, there's an opportunity for them, too.
There is. So on Sunday the 3rd, we'll have a teddy bear tea in one of the rooms at the Phelps Hathaway House and Garden. So folks are invited to come with their daughters or nieces or granddaughters and grandsons and nephews as well, of course. Bring their teddy bears and enjoy a story and holiday treats at this teddy bear tea. We also have a special authors event that day also at the Phelps Hathaway House. So we were really privileged to be included in a new book that's just come out called A Connecticut Christmas. And there are photos in that book of the house decorated by Julie Harrison, who's an amazingly talented local floral designer, and also of many other holiday destinations across the state. So Karen Davis, who is the photographer who did all the beautiful work for that book, will be signing her books and speaking along with floral designer Julie Harrison at the property on Sunday, December 3rd as well.
Great. And once again, for tickets and pricing and group packaging and multi-day benefits and discounts and all the information and directions to these properties, backstory, history, it's all at ctlandmarks.org, right?
Yes, it is. And also to buy a membership, which gets you discounted admission to all of these events and would be a great gift for that very difficult person to buy for the holiday season.
Very good. Coming up on the weekend after Thanksgiving at the Bellamy Faraday House, there's also a wreath-making workshop. Is that right?
There are wreath-making workshops happening Saturday, Sunday, and Tuesday following Thanksgiving. Very, very popular. So I would absolutely suggest that your listeners call and leave a message or buy tickets online immediately after hearing about this, because those are filling up fast. Our horticulturalist at the property, George McCleary, is very talented, and we have repeat customers from many years coming to join him for that wreath-making weekend.
Great. And then there's another cocktail party that's coming in mid-December at the Butler McCook House.
Yes, so we will celebrate the holidays at second Thursday at the Butler McCook property here in Hartford, and that date is Thursday, December 14th. That will be our cultural cocktail celebration from 5:30 to 7:30, and that property is located right on Main Street with parking behind the building at 59 South Prospect.
And it's also a featured property and destination for folks traversing First Night Hartford on New Year's Eve.
Absolutely. And you know, we have great activities for the whole family all afternoon on New Year's Eve.
Excellent. So key takeaways for this is ctlandmarks.org is the first place to go for any information, including up-to-the-minute activities that might be happening as soon as this weekend as we play the program. And looking forward well into 2018, if you see something that you think might be of interest to you, your family, folks that might be visiting you through the holiday season or into the new year, you might want to consider purchasing a membership, because you have extension of other special offers and discounts and things. So there is a benefit to supporting Connecticut Landmarks as a patron and a member. As we talk to and close the program with their executive director, Cheryl Hack. Cheryl, quickly looking forward to 2018. Anything folks should save the date for, or at least be aware of, that's happening in those kind of chilly months of January or February that's exciting and on the radar yet?
Oh, my goodness. So I would say that there's a little hibernation going on during January and February. So we don't endeavor to make our properties available during those months when it's so cold and the gardens are asleep. But we will be starting right up with Lilac Girls event during Lilac season in May at the Bellamy Faraday House and Garden. So that will be a time to come and enjoy the sweet scents in the air and learn more about Martha Hall Kelly's upcoming work.
Excellent. So make the best of the time left before December 31st by attending Connecticut Landmarks activities and events all around Connecticut. ctlandmarks.org is their website to learn all about it, get all the information on pricing, membership, and potential partnerships. And, of course, corporate underwriting is also welcomed as well. Cheryl Hack is Executive Director of Connecticut Landmarks. This fantastic organization has 11 properties around the state of Connecticut and will be packed with activities through the holidays. Bring yourself, your family, visiting guests, co-workers, and friends to experience old-fashioned colonial Christmas activities at many of these properties that will be decked out for the holidays, and all kinds of fun to have and enjoy with Connecticut Landmarks. Cheryl, great to speak with you, and we'll be talking to you again soon. Good luck with all the activities this fall and winter, and happy holidays and happy new year. How I have missed the Connecticut Business Leadership Network in casting my net wide across Connecticut for great guests to feature on the award-winning For the People. I do not know, but I am so glad that I have made the acquaintance of Sharon Denson, who's on the program with me this morning. She is Executive Director of the Connecticut Business Leadership Network, and what has brought me to her is that the network recently held its very first program in a new series entitled Inclusion Works Here, Creating an Inclusive Workplace from Recruiting to Retention. And this is by far not the first series of events that the network has held, but it is the latest and will be ongoing and is important in respect to the fact that our program and folks like Sharon and the folks in the Business Leadership Network work so hard to try to do what they can to break down barriers and stigmas for individuals that may have some sort of a disability that might either hamper or prevent them or discourage them from going out and trying to work when they're completely capable and want so badly to be contributing members of the Connecticut workforce. So Sharon, to you, I offer thanks and congratulations, and tell us a little bit about the network.
Okay, the Connecticut Business Leadership Network has been around since 1994, so we've been around for quite a while, and we are an organization of businesses committed to the hiring of individuals with disabilities. And our mission is to bring inclusion full circle to include people with disabilities in the workforce. We are a business-to-business organization. We do not work directly with job candidates with disabilities, although we do connect our members to organizations that do. And we work with best practices and training for businesses so that they can open up their workforce to individuals with disabilities and create that inclusive workforce.
Mm. And I guess if you just sort of glance at the headlines, you'd get the idea that, you know, the Connecticut business landscape is not in the greatest shape. A lot of companies are leaving or are flat in terms of hiring, but I'm told by my other sources that nothing could be further from the truth. There are many, many, many thriving businesses here in Connecticut, many that work with your network, and they are definitely in need of workforce candidates.
Most definitely. What we're looking at right now, and for some reason or other, the news has a tendency to focus on the unhappy things or bad things that are going on, but your sources are correct that there are businesses in Connecticut and they are thriving. And with, I believe at this point, a 4.3% unemployment rate, that's very close to full employment. That is not the picture for people with disabilities, which actually is an advantage in that it makes people with disabilities truly that untapped workforce. And businesses are now starting to recognize that, and we are assisting them in doing that by giving them the tools to understand how to successfully recruit, hire, and retain individuals with disabilities and take advantage of that talent pool.
Excellent. Well, that being said, let's talk a little bit about some of the ways you know that your members are performing the more unique or specialized types of outreach to help best connect themselves to the workforce pool that you're advocating for.
Well, there are a number of ways that we actually work with our businesses to find that best connection. One of the ways is for career fairs, and we have some coming up in October, which happens to be National Disability Employment Awareness Month. And we have a number of career fairs, that there's going to be one coming up in Waterbury, and we call those the Diversability Career Fairs. And we put those on with our partners at the Connecticut Department of Labor and Rehabilitation Services.
Very good.
So that is, we get great turnout for both businesses and for job seekers. And I've heard about hires and many success stories as a result of these career fairs.
So tell us, for folks out there who may have medium to small businesses, maybe a workforce between 5 and 20 people, who, you know, maybe started off small and got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger over time, and now they're at the point where they're starting to want to have more diversity in their employee base. Speak to those people about the kinds of resources that the candidates that your network is trying to connect them to can bring to their organization.
There are a variety of resources, as you said, and it depends on the type of job that you're looking to fill. We are connected with colleges and universities, so if you're looking for someone with a degree, who may or may not have a disability, but you're open to someone with a disability, the college and universities are a great place to start if you're looking for someone with a degree. If you're looking for someone to fill another kind of position or a variety of positions, we would connect you with the Department of Rehabilitation Services. And this is a state agency that works with individuals with who were born with or have acquired a disability and want to be in the workforce. So you're getting a great mix when you are working with Department of Vocational Resources of people with a lot of experience who may have acquired disability or people who are new to entering the workforce.
Very good.
Yeah.
So that being said, in the history of CTBLN, do you have some idea of how many successful candidates you've been able to help launch or establish a firm or lifelong career with your business members?
When talking to my business members, I do not have statistics, and statistics are very, very hard to get. Partially because until recently, people with disabilities did not disclose. And disclosure of a disability, and that makes it, whether or not one discloses, because some disabilities are hidden, you can't necessarily see them, makes it difficult to really get very, very hard data. But my understanding from speaking with our members is that their initiatives, with our help, have been quite successful. And they have been able to hire people with disabilities and on all levels throughout their businesses.
Well, that's good.
So we're really excited about that. And excited. Every time I hear a success story, I get very excited. It's a wonderful thing to see for everyone.
And do any functions of the network either interact with other partners or directly with job candidates in any respect to provide them with sort of up-to-the-minute counseling or advice on how to launch or venture out into the workforce to find maybe their first job or a permanent job?
We do not do that directly. We do that through our workforce partners. And again, those are the department, through the state, the Department of Rehabilitation Services, and the Department of Labor. So we work both very, very closely also with DDS, the Department of Developmental Services. And so those are three of our major partners, and we work very closely with them so that they understand the types of candidates that businesses are looking for. And so our businesses understand how to source those candidates.
Excellent. Folks, if you're listening, we're speaking with Sharon Denson. She is the executive director of the Connecticut, CTBLN, I should say, the Connecticut Business Leadership Network. It's a nonprofit business-to-business organization whose members are committed to bringing diversity full circle by including individuals with disabilities in the workplace. They recently held their first in a series of workshops called Inclusion Works Here, which focused on creating inclusive job descriptions. We're going to take a quick break and come back and talk with Sharon a little bit more, focusing not only back on the event that happened earlier in September, but also on what is in store for this series and other activities in the future. And we'll also touch base on some of these statewide job fairs that are going to be occurring starting in Waterbury very shortly. Sharon, stick with us. Folks, stick with us. We'll be right back. Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots causes that would love to have your support. You can learn about many of them through Love CT. Just go to our radio station website, hit the event guide tab, and click on to Love CT to help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Boquette. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. I'd like to introduce you to Sergeant Louis G. Columba. He serves with the United States Marine Corps, and he's the New Haven County Marines Toys for Tots coordinator. He and his legion of troops are on a mission to collect and distribute new toys as Christmas gifts to those children less fortunate in local communities. For more than six decades, the Marine Corps has distributed almost 500 million toys to children across the country. This success stems from great partners, sponsors, and volunteers that help raise funds and toy donations. Without you, this program would not be a success. So please volunteer to help your community by signing up to be a Toys for Tots volunteer, donating a brand new toy, or making a monetary donation. If you'd like to find out how, just visit new-haven-ct.toysfortots.org. Well, thanks for sticking with us. We're back with Sharon Denson. She's Executive Director of the Connecticut Business Leadership Network, CTBLN, working hard to help businesses accomplish a goal of making their workforce more diverse. They accomplish their mission through education, peer support, and sharing of best practices. As a professional organization, their members include business executives, diversity and inclusion, supply chain, and human resources professionals. I suppose many of them were in attendance at their September 15th event called Inclusion Works Here. It was the first session in an ongoing series. And I should also say ctbln.com is their website if you'd like to learn more, or perhaps be affiliated with this organization if you're not already. So Sharon, thanks for sticking with us. As I said, tell us a little bit about the kind of the conceptual formation of this latest series that you're doing called Inclusion Works Here.
Well, the idea came actually from our members. And we realized in speaking to our members that having a successful disability hiring initiative really depends on a lot on the culture of your organization, because you want those hires to stay there. You want them to be able to have careers and to work their way up the ladder, so to speak, in a larger business, or to have more responsibility if it's in a smaller business. And you can only do that if you have an inclusive culture. And we realize that it starts from the beginning. When you're seeking to hire and recruit individuals with disabilities, or actually this applies to someone from any diverse background, what is it that you need to do, and how do you need to think about crafting a job description that does not filter out some of the best candidates? So that is basically the idea behind our Inclusion Works Here series. We will start with job descriptions. Our next meeting, which will take place in November, will speak to inclusive interviewing techniques. And then we'll be going on to look at the other parts of creating an inclusive culture.
Very good. In the September 15th event, which was hosted by the Walgreens Distribution Center in Windsor, you were speaking to HR professionals and business leaders who are scripting the advertisements that go out to solicit candidates.
Essentially, yes, because that job description really informs the people who apply for a job. When they look at that description, they decide whether or not they have the qualifications, who applies, when they apply, how they're screened, so how all the applicants are screened, mm-hmm. as to whether or not they are, you know, applicants that meet the requirements of the job, and then how that hiring manager rates those applicants and then makes that hiring decision. So it's very, very important. And, you know, the words that you use in that description can make a very big difference.
Hmm. Well, what were a couple of the strongest points that you came away with from this event?
I would say the strongest points were the importance of working with a job description and making sure that description is up to date and it describes the position as it is done today and includes the essential functions of that job. So that when you're hiring for that job, and, you know, all of this just flows right through. When you're hiring for that job, you're going to be able to have a candidate who can actually fulfill those functions. It also is about hiring for ability and not as to whether or not that person looks like you as a hiring manager or went to your school or is similar to you, but whether or not they can do the job.
Mm.
So having a great focus on doing that job. And one of the people who was at, or one of the individuals who was at the event, who works for a major insurance company in the Hartford area, reinforced what I spoke to and talked about focusing the hiring managers when they were looking at candidates to focus on the abilities of the candidates.
Mm-hmm.
As to, you know, more than anything else. We have a tendency to hire, it's human nature, we have a tendency to hire in our own image.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. And when we do that, if we are not of a diverse background, we have a tendency to hire people who are not diverse.
Mm. That being said, you know, one of the more contemporary aspects of the human resources process is the heavy use, and I've witnessed people who mainstream individuals who are a little bit older or are coming back into the workforce after a period of time being away, who are computer savvy but not really computer savvy, and the prospect of kind of threading all the needles in the online application process is sometimes daunting to them, and it could be difficult. Do you recall if there was any mention whatsoever in the course of at least this first workshop in your series about either making accommodations for individuals who, due to their disability, may not be as savvy or even able to use computer technology that seems to be now the gateway through which most of the workforce must pass in order to actually ever even interact with, be visited by, or talk to a human being?
This is a challenge, and you mentioned it is a challenge. You don't necessarily have to have a disability to find this a challenge. As for people with disabilities, the law requires that people with disabilities who are unable to go through that process have the opportunity to speak with someone from the company who can help them through the process. So often on a website, you will see a phone number, or an email address, or a way of contacting human resources, so that if you cannot, if the website and the website application process is not accessible to you, you are able to be walked through it.
And the law backs that up.
Yes.
Very good. Great. In the last couple minutes that we have with you, Sharon, for folks that may have tuned in late or are getting ready to go into our music programming days or other programming on our stations, could you just remind them about this other component of partnership that you're doing with these job fairs?
Well, one of the things that we are really excited we've done throughout our history has been career fairs. And these are career fairs that are designed to draw in people with disabilities, and we welcome people with disabilities. Our last few career fairs that we have partnered with the Department of Labor and the Department of Rehabilitation Services on have been called the Diversability Career Fairs. We will be holding a number of them in October. The first of these is on October 6th at Naugatuck Community College, and it would be for the Waterbury area. We will also be having one in Middletown, and we will be having one in New Haven. And more will be coming up. We will be announcing more as they come up.
So people
if
can go.
Somebody wants to find it. Excuse me?
Oh, I was going to say, people can go to your website then to learn about where and when these are, as well as the upcoming segments of the Inclusion Works Here series?
Yes, they can. And those upcoming segments will be announced shortly. As for the career fairs, to go directly to the site for them, you would go to ctjobfairs.com.
Excellent.
And that will give information for both job seekers and for businesses that would like to sign up to register for one of these career fairs.
Very good. Well, Sharon, it was great to meet you and talk with you and learn more about the Connecticut Business Leadership Network. And now that you're kind of in the loop with us, I look forward to talking with you and your designees regularly to help not only remind Connecticut businesses about the opportunities being part of your network could afford them, but also the opportunities that you bring to many people who might not otherwise have a chance to enter the workforce in Connecticut or improve their status in their job life. The Connecticut Business Leadership Network is a nonprofit business-to-business organization whose members are committed to bringing diversity full circle by including individuals with disabilities in the workplace. You can learn more about them at ctbln.com. Our guest has been Sharon Denson, who is their executive director. Sharon, great to meet you once again, and thanks so much for taking the time this morning. All right. Well, when I had the occasion to call for help from EARS, the Emergency Animal Response Service, unfortunately, in my case, it was too late to tap their services, but they were kind enough to offer to come out and help at no charge. EARS is a nonprofit animal emergency team serving all of Connecticut at no cost to its patients or owners. And we're so pleased to join a threesome of representatives from EARS today. We're going to start with John Nowinski, who is the founder of the organization. John, thanks for having us up here today. We should tell people we're meeting you today as you're staked out at Griffin Hospital in Derby. And is this something that you guys do? You go out to various places to kind of build awareness?
Yeah, exactly. Especially this time of year with it being summertime and hot and people are out traveling with their animals. We do a lot of these community events to not only raise awareness of our services should anybody ever need us, but also give some advice on things to do for the summertime to make sure that pets are safe. And also just in general, if you have a pet emergency, you know, what do you do? There's a lot of questions. Obviously, they don't always happen when timing is right, things like that. So just to make people aware that we're there if they need us, whether it be providing resources to a local veterinary or emergency clinic that's in their area, or whether it is something that they need help with an animal where a member of our team will actually come out 24/7 and assist them with that.
Let's do a little backstory. Tell us about yourself and how this whole idea came to light.
Myself, I've been around animals my entire life. I'm one of those people that have never been without one. I'm also one of those people who've been in situations where I've had an animal that needed to get into a vet and I didn't have a car or I didn't quite know what to do. Thankfully, you know, I was able to get through those. But basically, EARS started during Hurricane Sandy. I was doing some volunteer work with a couple local volunteer fire departments, as well as a rescue farm that's actually up in Bethany, Connecticut. And when areas of Milford and Stratford and Orange began to get evacuation orders, the fire departments actually started to get people with pets that needed assistance. And they started to reach out to me knowing that I was working with animals in some capacity. And we kind of pulled together a very small group of people to go out and help the individuals with pets get out of those areas. And as that grew, I realized that there was really a need for that. Basically, you know, not only in the evacuation aspect, but then also in the aspect of medical emergency. Not everybody is able to get their own pets up, and not everybody, you know, feels comfortable doing it. They're worried about further injury to their animal. And sometimes, you know, we just have large animals, large pets, too. You know, you can have an 80-pound dog that, under normal circumstances, goes outside, jumps in the car, and it's fine. But, you know, if that dog's unable to help itself, that's a lot of weight to try to move yourself.
Sure.
And
sure.
Not everybody can do it, which is totally understandable.
At what point in the history post Hurricane Sandy did you add the actual vehicle to give you sort of like a rolling triage center to transport the animals?
Well, that's a really good question. Basically, I started working with VCA Shoreline Emergency Animal Hospital in Shelton. I started there as a veterinary assistant, and now I'm an emergency specialist. So we see a lot of situations that come in where owners would call our hospital and need assistance getting into the hospital. And unfortunately, from the veterinary standpoint, there's a lot that can be done in hospital, but most vet clinics don't have the ability to go out and assist an owner to come in. So it used to be, you know, our suggestions were to try to get a friend or get a neighbor. And basically that I saw that need, and thankfully we haven't had a huge need for the disaster aspect. So even though we're fully trained in that and ready to do that, we started adding the ability of responding to medical emergencies. We do a lot of that with the volunteer fire departments around here because they know that we're trained in emergency response. So we do things like supporting them on site with oxygen for pets, with basic first aid and triage for pets, basically taking the animal aspect from them so that they can focus on the human aspect or the fire in those situations. Mm-hmm. We were lucky enough to get this ambulance a year and a half ago. It was actually, we raised the money to do it. It is a human ambulance that we have now modified and retrofitted for animal use. The amazing thing is, one of the things we love doing here at places like this hospital, like Griffin Hospital, is that even EMTs and nurses here know what an ambulance is obviously like. So they're very surprised when they see the capability we have, because it's very akin to what a human ambulance would carry.
Yeah, sure.
We do have oxygen on board for animals. We have first aid supplies. We have stretchers. We have medical bags, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
It is basically the level of care for people. For animals, and some people would say it's sometimes a little even better than that.
Yeah. Well, I guess for my last question before we meet Bree and the other John is obviously we're going to talk to John Santori, who's not just a responder but kind of an exotics expert, and he's here today with a snake. And I guess you go down to the pet mice and gerbils and reptiles and parakeets and things like that. How big do you go? I mean, do you guys go to horses and larger animals, even if it's not involving transports but immediate care on site?
We do. People are very surprised. We actually do everything from small animals, basically, you know, the sort of pocket pets, like rabbits and things
sure.
like that, all the way up to horses. Obviously not in the rig itself, but
right.
we actually do use the rig as a basis for operations like that. We have a closet on the outside of the ambulance, which is completely filled with large animal gear. So we actually do carry halters, lead ropes. We also carry lifting straps and pole straps in case a horse does go down and need assistance with that. So we actually do carry large animal equipment on this ambulance as well. We do have a hitch on the ambulance, which if need be, we can pull a trailer. So we are actually perfectly capable of sort of expanding the base of the ambulance. The other thing about the ambulance is that we do carry in what would normally be the outside stretcher or backboard closet. We carry a pop-up tent. And we also carry tables. So
okay.
we're actually capable of not only operating within the ambulance, but sort of expanding that
sure.
footprint
wow.
Should we need a larger aspect, like having multiple animals involved with a triage or something like that.
Excellent. We're speaking with John Nowinski. He's the founder of EARS, the Emergency Animal Response Service, available 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, and it all comes at no cost. Of course, they would welcome your contributions. They are a nonprofit animal emergency team serving all of Connecticut. EA rsct.org is their website if you'd like to learn more, or you can give them a call in Connecticut. Their emergency number, if need be, is 203-247-0310. So Bree is inside, so we'll come and meet this fine gentleman, John Santori, who has a equally wonderful special guest this morning, which is, and I made the mistake of calling it a garter snake, and I saw it got a little mad at me. John Santori, great to meet you. What do we have here in your wrapped around your hands and arms?
We have a Mexican black king snake.
And was this one that was donated by someone who thought it was a good idea at some point to acquire it?
Oh, no. This was came from my friend Frank. He couldn't keep it because he had a cat, and the cat wouldn't leave it alone. And he already had a bearded dragon. He's like, you know, I'll just give this to someone. And he gave it to me. And I've had him for a couple of years now.
Oh, okay. Well, tell us, for all of the folks that might be listening who either themselves own what you would classify as exotic animals or those out there who may be considering getting one, are there a few specific things that you like to advise people when it comes to this class of pet?
I do. Bearded dragons are the main thing that people like to get as exotic animals, and they are, they're not difficult to take care of, but they do get bigger than most people realize. Kind of like most snakes, mm-hmm. and they're considered exotic. Geckos, amphibians of all kinds. So, ooh, come here, buddy. So I advise people whenever they ask me if they want to get these things, I tell them exactly what they're in for, the temperature requirements, the feeding requirements, and anything else they have questions for.
Is there a typical handful of exotic animals that are so prolific in the Connecticut area that you're getting more of a preponderance of calls to respond for assistance to them?
We don't get a lot of calls for exotics. If we were, it'd be more for the bigger animals that people don't like to handle or it's difficult for them to get. Right. Like iguanas are bigger, they get really big. Bearded dragons, not so much. Something called an Argentine tegu, which gets kind of big. It's kind of like a small dog.
Oh, okay. Very good. Well, we thank you for taking a few minutes with us and introducing us to your maybe forever friend or your current pet.
20 years.
Oh, okay. So he'll be around to see you grow older.
Yeah.
Great. Bree, let's bring you in real quick. Bree Oleander is a primary responding technician. And Bree, what I wanted to go to you for, and thanks for taking a few minutes to talk with us, is if you could, as I have experienced recently in my call to your office, to your agency, I should say, you know, you're in that white hot moment where your typical pets, the dog or the cat, may have either gotten hit by a car or suddenly starts screaming or are in obvious distress. The owner is trying to help, or maybe even as I heard a couple of days ago, the cat came back kind of horribly mauled and wet with Lord knows what. Can you give the folks who are listening some advice that they may be able to call upon if they come upon or are called by their pet because that pet is experiencing some sort of trauma?
Yes. So a lot of times that we do calls, it's the dog has either had some issues, has been hit, or has a lot of trauma. And the owner, for me, because I have my own dogs, it's so stressful. It is very emotional. But the dog is there and needs to be calm. In order for any types of treatment, for us to check them out, for anything to happen, we need to make sure the dog's calm. And the only way they can do that is by listening to our voices and understand that if we're calm, they'll be calm. And know a lot of the times that we do transports, it is bringing them to the Rainbow Bridge. And as long as they know that the ride is safe, they're going for a ride, they're enjoying themselves, they'll know that always and forever, they'll have that special treatment. The dogs, in my heart, it's really hard to remove yourself as an owner. It is significantly difficult, especially putting yourself in seeing a dog that's been lying there for hours or a dog that's been in just so much trauma. They need that calm, relaxed. And I never realized that I actually had that natural instinct is being very calm in those types of situations. It's the same thing as EMS, being calm and being able to relax and talk through the process. We give the owners this is what's happening. We're going to take our time. A lot of owners think that us taking our time isn't urgent, but taking your time, relaxing, and making sure that the dog is not paralyzed or anything like that is what we try to make sure the owners understand.
Okay.
And a lot of times it's assess the situation first before you do anything.
Okay.
And a lot of times it's just talking to them and knowing that they're going to be okay, even though sometimes you know it's not.
Yeah. So if there's a pet emergency, the number one thing is to force yourself to be calm, speak calmly.
Yep.
Soothe the animal, and ears will be on.
Definitely
the way.
Get us on the call first. Call for help first. Yep.
Fantastic. Once again, if you're experiencing an animal emergency anywhere in Connecticut, ears, the Emergency Animal Response Service, is ready for you. Their emergency contact number is 203-247-0310. If you'd like to learn more about them, it's earsct.org. The Emergency Animal Response Service is available and a nonprofit organization working on behalf of all pet owners and pet lovers in Connecticut. If you'd like to help them out with a donation or some underwriting or find out other ways to get involved, I'm sure they'd be glad to hear from you. Just check them out at earsct.org to get in touch. And once again, if you're faced with an animal emergency, give ears a call at 203-247-0310. We want to thank John Nowinski, the founder of the organization, as well as Bree Oleander, a primary responder and technician, and John Santori, who's also a responder and exotics expert. Thank you guys for being on the program. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host and do not necessarily represent the views of Connoisseur Media. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a community calendar item relevant to the audience and communities we serve, you must make a request for consideration in writing via email to me at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file, reflecting the full scope of our station's responsiveness to critical issues in the communities we serve, can be viewed upon request weekdays during normal business hours in the New Haven area at 440 Wheelers Farms Road in Milford, and for our Hartford stations at 869 Blue Hills Avenue in Bloomfield. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. This is John Voquette, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Join us again at this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. Don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab at our radio station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.